She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 207, How to Transition from Entrepreneur to CEO with Farisa Knox.
Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, a collective of interviews with top female entrepreneurs from around the globe who have done it their way. These women are disruptors, savvy, courageous, confident, innovative, decisive, unconventional, and humble. Our ladies have proven business models, have taken risks, and have failed only for success to follow. Join us as they share their stories, behaviors, habits, mindset, thought processes, and what it is like to be a woman who means business. And now, here's your host, Amanda Bolin.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the She Did It Her Way podcast. I'm super stoked for you guys to tune into today's episode because we are bringing back Miss Farisa Knox, who was the second guest that I interviewed on the She Did It Her Way podcast when it first launched 3 years ago, this coming January, which is pretty radical to think that it's been around for 3 years, which is incredible. And the fun part about this is because I've personally grown as an entrepreneur and through my journey, my questions are much different than they were in the beginning. Also, Farisa launched another company. And the main point of our conversation is we talk about how you transition from entrepreneur to CEO, because at some point as we grow our business and it gets bigger than what we can manage, we have to start making decisions that then can scale our business. And it's a really great conversation talking with her as she walks us through how she scales, see how she conducts market research and brainstorms for new content and new businesses, and then also learn about how you may grow throughout your years of being an entrepreneur. So I asked her to basically take the past 9 years of entrepreneurship and break it down into chunks and then put a title to that phase of her entrepreneurship journey and share with us what were the learning lessons in each of those. So super stoked. Stay tuned for the episode with Farisa coming up next. Hey friends, for today's podcast episode, I have partnered with FreshBooks. And before I dive into who and what FreshBooks is and what they do, I want to share how grateful I am for the sponsors of this podcast. Because of them, it allows me to free up my time to focus on content building and serving you guys, my people, my listeners, to help grow your business and create profits in your business. And now, speaking of profits and business, let's get back to FreshBooks. So you guys have all heard me talk about them, but I've never gotten into the nitty-gritty as to why I absolutely love them. So FreshBooks is ridiculously easy accounting software designed with the freelancer or service-based businesses in mind. And it is extremely intuitive, and the user interface when you log in actually makes you want to hang out for a bit longer versus some other accounting systems that can be extremely overwhelming. So I use FreshBooks for my contract work, and it makes it super easy to create an invoice, follow up, draft an invoice so that I never forget to collect money, and create expense reports. Also in FreshBooks, they have this amazing time tracker. So you can not only keep track of your time, but if you use contractors, you can invite them to your team and actually watch and have them keep track of their time. So everything I just shared is from personal experience, and it is not from some script. I've actually had interaction. I've used the product, and their customer service team is amazing. So if you're in need of a software, accounting software, head on over to freshbooks.com/she and then enter in She Did It Her Way in the How Did You Hear About Us box. So now onto the show. All right. Gotta love technology. This is like our third or fourth attempt, but I think we finally got it this go around. I tell you what, you guys, you just gotta roll with the punches. Is that how they say it? I don't know. Is that true, Farisa?
It's true. I like your Matt McConaughey impersonation.
I couldn't even, honestly, I didn't even know where that came from, but he's kind of funny, I guess. So, you guys, we're hanging out. I say we're because you guys are listening and it obviously makes me not feel lonely. We're with Farisa Knox, who was actually, she was the second guest on the podcast when it first launched back in 2015, which is crazy to think that it's been around for almost 3 years come January, which is awesome. And I thank you guys so much for being on the journey with me. It's been amazing. But I thought it would be a fun opportunity to bring Farisa back on for a few different reasons. One, she is working on some new ventures, and she's someone that I highly respect from a business acumen and the way that she goes about business. And two,
since it's been 3 years, I'm sure because of my experience, my questions may change based on what I've gone through now in the past 3 years of being an entrepreneur as well. And she's like a badass and she's awesome. So Fariso, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. I love that intro.
Yeah, girl. Well, I've had time to practice it a few times. For those, I know like majority of the listeners are going to be new because we had such a small pool of people in the listeners in the beginning, and we've definitely grown so much since then. Why don't you tell us what it is that you do? We'll talk a little bit about your journey and how you got there and just dive in and have a chat from there.
Yeah. So I have the pleasure and honor of having two companies. My first company I started 9 years ago, and it's an advertising agency. And we do media planning and buying for our clients all over the country. So that includes, you know, negotiating and placing ads basically across all mediums and monitoring those campaigns. And then a few years into my original entrepreneurship journey, I decided it was a good idea to start a second company that was more based on my passions and not the skills, you know, the education that I got in school. And I've always loved fashion and style and decided to create What Are You Wearing? And over the years, it's morphed a few times, but we have really found its perfect sweet spot, if you will. And we're a digital publishing like house. Basically, we have our What Are You Wearing platform that delivers daily editorial. We have a podcast ourselves called Fast Fashion, and we have weekly episodes on there. And just weeks ago, we launched our first venture into original web series development, and we created a reality show called PR Girl. And it's based on one girl here in Chicago, her life in the PR industry and all the ups and downs and all that, but in a web series format. So I'm excited. I couldn't be more excited to like talk to you today and like literally update you on everything going on.
Yeah, no, that's impressive. And not to mention you have like two little ones running around who are acting like they're going on 25.
Yes, my daughters are amazing and crazy and hysterically funny.
Yes. So what, you started RLM, the long journey for 9 years now, and we'll talk about how you started that and what inspired you. But my question is what was the strategic business move as to why doing a web series? Like what was the thought behind that?
Yes. I love that question because like not everyone gets that, you know, that it was a business decision and it was just a strategic one at that. So for What Are You Wearing? I study my audience really well and I try to understand them as best as I can to give them the content that, will not just grow our platform, but, you know, expand the What Are You Wearing brand to one that's just known by a few people here and there to being a household name. Like that's my goal with What Are You Wearing? And so when I started thinking about what type of content my audience would want to see and ultimately, you know, potentially make viral, it had to be video because the 18 to 34 year old woman who loves these categories of things, you know, fashion, beauty, and style are consumed with video right now on social media and on just the internet in general. So when I sat down to think about what types of original video content can I create for my audience, just knowing everything that I know about them, what industry they would most aspire to, what type of visual elements in video kind of stimulate them and make them, you know, have a conversation, I came to the conclusion that a reality show around someone in their 20s who works in the PR industry, who lives a life that is as close as possible to this dream, you know, world of PR that Sex and the City and The Hills and, you know, like those kind of shows created, but in real life, like, and she's a hard worker and she's a real person and she's tangible. You know, I wanted to show the reality of PR, but with a little glitz and glamour as well.
Yeah. Well, she definitely, I mean, that is a great individual to pick because she is, from my interaction with her, is she is like such a hard worker and has done really well for herself, especially at such a young age and doing that. What's your plan? Like, how do you, what is it? I mean, where does someone begin? Okay, you're like, I'm going to do this series. And like, what were some of your first steps that you took to make it a reality and to put it in place? Like, after you had secured Alex as like the main character, then what did you have to do? What was the plot creation? Is it staged? Like, what does that even look like?
Yeah. So before I even found Alex, I had to, first of all, determine if it was a good idea, because I'm not in, you know, television. I don't create television shows for a living. So I felt it was a good idea. And my internal What Are You Wearing team was like obsessed with the idea. But I wanted to first and foremost talk to someone in the industry who has knowledge about what, you know, what's selling literally for television content today. So I had a friend who actually did a video for me for RLM that lives on our homepage. And in creating that video, we got to know each other, and he was telling me about his experience out in LA and filming and pitching reality shows and all this stuff. And he was the first person that I thought of to call and pitch, not pitch him, but basically pitch him the idea to see if he thought it was good and where the holes might be. And when he heard the idea, he immediately loved it, thought it was brilliant, and was like, I want to be a part of it. However you need me to be a part of this, I want to do it. And he was like, so who's the girl? And I was like, I don't know. Give me a minute. Let me go find her. So that was the second step. Then I started, you know, just doing, like, honestly, like cyber stalking people, like on Instagram, on LinkedIn, trying to figure out who are the girls here locally, because, you know, I finance this, so I didn't want to, you know, go outside of Chicago. I want to be able to be an Uber ride away, not like a flight away from this person. and then just like plugged into my network and saw who am I connected to? Who are the girls that I can literally sit down and have a conversation with and gauge their character for a project like this? And I sent out messages to a handful of girls, and my conversation with Alex was the one that just never stopped. It just kept on going. And she, you know, was on board pretty much from the moment I told her my vision for the show, which was not like a typical reality show, especially when it's all women involved. You know, there's no drama in the show. It's not about, you know, Alex arguing with her girlfriends or, you know, this and that. It's about her professional life with a sprinkle of her personal life in it. And it's more about female empowerment and showing positive images of women instead of like ridiculous, like table throwing, like wine in the face, like craziness.
Like that Real Housewives craziness.
Exactly. Which, by the way, bravo, I love Real Housewives, but it already exists. And so we need to counterbalance that with like some positive young, stuff out there. So I think that's what really caught Alex's attention to say yes to me.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And I know you had said that, like, you were financing it. I'm curious then, too, I mean, if you could talk about it, but you approached PR Couture. So how did you even start a conversation in deciding, like, who got the rights or whatever that legal relationship that you guys entered in? And how did you know what it would look like, or what was that process like?
Yeah. So after I secured my, you know, videographer and producer and editor, which is my first friend, and after I secured Alex as the star of the show, it was like, oh my God, this is real. Like, all right, what's next? And the next missing piece was marketing and promotion of the show. Again, because What Are You Wearing's audience is not this massive, like, you know, multi-million person audience. So I knew I needed to partner with another organization to help with the press outreach and the marketing, and just so that we had a larger platform to showcase this series once it came out. And I had been a fan and a follower of PR Couture for a couple years, And immediately thought of them and said, oh, wouldn't it be great if Pierre Couture would like literally just tell their audience about this show, but how can I make that a reality and how would I go about that? So I just sent a cold blind email through Pierre Couture's website, because I didn't know Crosby. I didn't know she was the founder of Pierre Couture. I just knew the brand. And sent a nice note that was very like LinkedIn-ish. Like, I'm like a pro at these LinkedIn messages to get people to respond to me. I'm really good at that. And I kind of channeled that, where I gave her enough information so she knew I was a real person, that I had a great idea, gave her a little sprinkle of that, and then told her what I wanted and needed. I wanted to have a conversation with her about this idea to see how we could potentially work together to make this real. And she emailed me back like later that day, the same day. And I was like through the moon excited. And we probably had like a week long email conversation that just was back and forth about, oh, so tell me more. And who's the girl? And, you know, we learned about our brands, you know, as business owner women. And eventually she was like, I love this. I want to be a part of it. Let's have a conversation. Let's Skype, because I'm in San Diego. And I was like, no, this is more important than Skype. I'm going to get on an airplane and I'm going to fly to San Diego and I'm going to have lunch with you. And I, you know, if we're going to do this, I want to meet you. I want to know you. And I really want to make sure that I get the point across how serious I am about this. So I took my ass out to San Diego and met with Crosby. And basically over lunch, we decided we were going to be partners on this. And the way it all boiled out was, you know, I'm the creator of the show because it's my idea. It's my concept. It's my brand and my company financing it 100% right now. And where she comes in is a marketing partner and a brand development partner. And so she got, you know, first rights to announce it, because she is still, you know, like a publication in her own right. So her website got the ability to announce to her audience before anyone else knew that PR girl was going to be a thing. Or, you know, so she gets rights to exclusive content and really to be a part of the show and the branding of the show, because her brand and the PR girl brand is so, it's like seamlessly connected. So it makes all the sense in the world. And then hopefully the girls who watch the show are inspired, and then they can go, you know, kind of get smart on the industry through Pierre Couture. So that's really how the relationship breathes.
Yeah, I know when Crosby was on the podcast, and which was so ironic that you were talking about wanting to get connected with Pierre Couture, and this was like, I don't know, months ago. And the week that you told me about Pierre Couture, I'm like, why does that sound familiar? And then she popped in my like inbox, and I was like, oh, I think she's coming on the podcast. And like, there was this divine universe speaking moment, I guess.
Yeah, I love when that happens.
I know. It's exciting when that does, because you're like, ooh, it actually is a small world. So, okay, I want to table PR girl for a hot second, and I want to go back to the fact that you launched RLM Media, and it's 9 years old, and so you have a tremendous amount of experience of running an agency, but take us back to the days of, like, the first 2 to 3 years, or, like, let me actually take my question back. Sorry about that. If you look at your life cycle as an entrepreneur and the 9 years that you have been an entrepreneur, is there like a trend or a stage in a life cycle that you would say, yes, like 1 to 3 years looked like this, 3 to 5 years looked like this? Like, is there any sort of story that you can tell us and share with us about like your experience as an entrepreneur over the course of 9 years?
Wow. That's a great question, Amanda. So yes, there is. And I would say it's kind of loose though, because it depends on the type of company that you have. And I can say that with confidence because one company that I have is a service, you know, company. And then the other, I'm all about attracting consumers and people to the brand. So for my agency, my first year, most of it was out of my house. I was what folks are calling now a solopreneur.
Yes.
So I was just working out of my living room and figuring it out and really putting the procedures and things in place that, in my mind, was the best way to do things if I were just an employee. Like if, you know, if the CEO of some company came to me that I worked at and said, hey, what would you like to see this look like? And I just made it. And that was the foundation of the company. I think in the first 3 years, you're making decisions on things that will be the foundation of your company and the strength of your company to come that will really affect how people see you years down the line. And you don't know that yet, that you're doing that. You just think, I'm trying to make it towards, you know, tomorrow or next week or next month, and get clients and get clients. But it's more than just getting clients and getting money. You're laying the foundation for your future success and reputation. So that's like the first few years. And then like from year 4 to 6, let's say, it's about your growth, like your first phase of growth and what that feels like and what that looks like and how you define it. For me, it was making sure that I am not, you know, a slave to my company. And for me to be able to do that, I transitioned from being an entrepreneur to a CEO. Like, I don't even consider myself, I mean, obviously I'm an entrepreneur because I own companies, but I am a CEO now. I am a professional chief executive officer, and I run two companies that I just so happen to own. And in changing my thought process across that second phase of growth, that allowed me to think like a CEO and a president. And so I'm hiring people and I'm negotiating salaries and I'm delegating work that I used to do onto other people's desks so that my focus can be really that of a successful CEO, which is new business and building, you know, strategy into the future. Like, I'm building what RLM will look like 5-10 years from now, not, you know, fighting with clients or vendors about this and that or the other, because I'm running a company. I'm not an employee of a company anymore. And then now we're slowly, and this is like perfect timing because we're honestly transitioning, or have, like, I don't know, the past month or so, into a new phase, that next phase, which has felt really good. And like, I'm like a proud mom. It's basically where we've been doing this for long enough where no one questions whether we're good at it anymore. You know, when you say 9 years, people are like, oh yes, like the reputation is there, the value is there, the length of time is there. Now it's sending people, I get clients and partners sent my way. And then I'm having meetings about how can we work together? What is it that you need? How did you hear about me? Well, I just asked somebody, do you know a really good advertising agency that does media that hopefully could be owned by a woman or a person of color? And the first thing on everyone's mouth is, yeah, have you heard of RLM Media? So that being true now is like one of my most prideful, and like, I'm really proud of that.
I love it really quick too. I love how you said that no one's questioning you, because in the beginning, it's almost this, I even still, like, right? I mean, I've been an independent contractor since 2012, which is a lot different than when you are the one. It's different than like being a CEO and exchange and building out and outsourcing and doing things like that. And, you know, it is that, like, there's that pressure, or people question and they're like, okay, great. Like, you've been doing it a year. Are you going to make it to 2 years? Are you going to make it to 3 years? Like, how serious are you? And then you get to that level of time and people are like, oh, okay, you're not going away. Got it.
Right. And that's normally like the 5-year mark. People always say if you make it to like 5 to 7 years, then you've outperformed the majority of companies that start. And So now being approaching year nine, it's like, wow, okay, I am, my fears and my concerns have completely shifted. Like I'm no longer concerned about, you know, how are we going to make payroll? Because the money is coming, the clients are there. It's more about managing the money and growing the company. And now I can start thinking like an owner of a company, because that's the next phase for me personally. Like I started as an employee of RLM. Then I was like a high level executive there or here. And then for a while I got to perform as a CEO. And now I'm kind of dual CEO and owner. I more spend time thinking as the owner of RLM. And what does that mean for me if I want to have a successful exit? And what does that look like? How do I grow the value of RLM so I can sell it maybe one day and figure out, you know, how I can, you know, make millions of dollars on the hard work that I've put in over the almost decade of doing this? So those are all the phases that I can think of right now.
Do you think that you had mentioned like either selling the company or and growing it and positioning the value? What can you share in terms of like, okay, let me back up and say an example from my end. Like when I started out as an independent contractor, I was like, oh, I had no formal plan. I'm like, whatever, it's working now. Like I'll keep working it. That's fine. And I didn't really desire or see the need to actually look at it as a business. And so do you believe that business owners should look for an exit at some point, or is it just really individual situation to say, like, if you want to keep running it and leave the company, like, that's what you're going to be doing until you retire? Or like, what's your take on that?
I think all business owners should have some sort of conversation with themselves about what their potential exit strategy is. The exit strategy doesn't necessarily have to be selling the company, but you won't want to run your company for the rest of your life. Because even you mentioned retirement, like if you own the company and you want to retire one day, which most people do, that is your exit, but you have to put things in place to be able to retire. Because if you're running the company and you retire, who's going to run the company? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to think about all of those things as soon as you possibly can stand to think about them, because it takes time. Like while you're building the company, almost simultaneously, you have to be, you know, heading towards, you know, what your exit is going to be.
Right, right, right. No, that's a great point. What, like, how do you define success? And then I want to dive into, like, how do you set your company goals? Do you do it by quarterly? Do you do it, like, yearly? And if so, like, how are you guys mapping out 2008, my goodness. That was, like, a decade ago. Right. 2018 and how you are, like, getting ready and what's your focus? Do you measure it by clients? You measure it by revenue? Like what sort of metrics do you use to set your benchmarks?
Yeah, for RLM, first and foremost, it's all about revenue. Because, you know, we're a service company and, you know, we're spending a lot of other folks' money. So the fees that we make off of that is our revenue, our net revenue, our gross revenue counts also because it tells the story of how much dollars our clients entrust us with. So our gross and net revenue numbers are how we measure success. But on top of that, it's also the caliber of client that we're working with. You know, so in the advertising world, the larger the brand, you know, the nicer it is to say that you've worked with them because it shows that, you know, certain names and brands will trust you with their dollars. So we've kind of narrowed our focus to certain categories of businesses, not on purpose, just because it's, again, I've like just listened to the marketplace and seen where the need was the most for a firm like mine, mm-hmm. and where we could be the most valuable or value add and still, you know, successfully play this game. And the healthcare space, the recruitment space for like new employees, political advertising, and you know, government contracts. So like city, state, and federal contracts have been like our biggest categories over the past 9 years. And it took me a long time to like figure out like that was our bread and butter. But then when I kind of figured out a strategy to go after those types of accounts specifically, that was like an internal kind of win for us, and then like tipping point towards more revenue.
Mm-hmm. So then I know you mentioned gross and net for revenue. Any other like goals or structure that you put in place that has really like, well, let me back up. So over the years, what have you found in terms of like a structure or a routine that's worked for you that has like yielded you the biggest ROI, whether it's financial or time or just a boost in productivity?
That's a good question. I don't know if I've ever thought about it like that, because there's a lot of different things that need to be happening at the same time for there to be success overall. So the first thing is like, I'm always like, and I mean that, always looking for new business for RLM. I don't like leave my house and see buses or billboards the way normal people see buses or billboards. A bus rides past me and I'm in an Uber and I'm looking to see who's on, what ad is on that bus. And is it mine? and if it's not, what is it? And try and put the pieces of the puzzle together around the business structure of that ad, and what I can figure out about, you know, who's behind that money and if I could, you know, potentially go after it. Same thing with listening to the radio, watching TV. Like, I am not a normal consumer of content. So I'm always on the lookout for new business. I'm always talking to people about what my desires are, what my company can do, and how well we do it. That combined with me being able to delegate to the people on my team, but also grow them at the same time. So my people who work here are literally the currency of this company, because without them and their skill sets and the ability to learn and grow, I can't grow. Because if I can't give some of the stuff that used to be on my desk to my VP, so then I can, that frees me up to go do other things, then that's not good. But it also has to be trickled down. Like, she has to also train the rest of the media team to grow so that she can move stuff from her desk to theirs. And so that, if anything, I think that is the strategy of RLM and our secret to success is that, yeah, I take stuff off my desk every day, every quarter, every year, and move it to someone else's desk and allow them to grow and flourish as an individual. And then that lets me go focus on bigger pieces of wins for us. And when people can't do that, they're not a good fit for here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bring in a lot of good people.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, as we're kind of winding down here too, share with us, what are some of your non-negotiables as a, like a human being and managing your time, your businesses, everything from family? Like, what are some of the things that you put in place to provide structure so that you can be the best version of yourself?
Yeah. Well, I love being present. Like, you know, wherever I am, whoever I'm with, I do my absolute best to give them 100% of my attention. And I'm sort of a snob when it comes to people giving that back to me, especially my husband. Like, he's not as good as it as me. And I'm like, put your phone down. Like, I am talking to you. But I do that. I do that at work. When people walk into my office, I could be in the middle of typing an email and I will stop, give them eye contact, look at them and help them solve whatever issue that they came in here with. When I'm at home with my kids, I am doing that also. My phone is away. If we're watching Peppa Pig, we are watching Peppa Pig together and I'm not on Instagram and I'm not on emails. Same thing with friends. Like unless there's an emergency, I have my phone in my purse on the floor while I'm having dinner with friends because I want to be present. But what that does though is allow me to focus like so strongly on what I'm doing when I'm doing it that you get a ton more done. So if it's quality time with your family or your friends, it's special because it truly is quality because you're not spreading yourself in that quality time. When I'm at work and I'm like checking off items on my to-do list, it's because I'm 100% focused on what I have to do in that time frame. So it's just like extreme focus and extreme like dedication to what's in front of you or who's in front of you in that moment. Those two things are like complete non-negotiables for me. And I hate lying. Like I hate people who lie for no reason. And, you know, and there's no reason to lie in business, to be honest. Like over the almost 10 years I've been in business for myself, I'll have employees come in and tell me this story about, okay, so I made a mistake and this is what happened, this, that, blah, 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 blah. And then they'll be like, what do you want me to tell the client? And I'll just say, the truth. Mm. What do you mean? Like, the truth is what we tell the client. And then we tell them what we plan to do about it to fix it. That's it. That's the answer. And they're like, oh, okay. Like, you know, it's just like mind-boggling to people that the truth is really the best thing to tell people. And to be honest with you, I have so much going on. Like if I lie to people, I'm not going to remember that I lied to you. So I tell everyone the truth so I can remember what I said because it's always going to be true.
Amen. Amen to that. That is for sure. It's not worth the, yeah, no, I'm totally with you. And I feel like people can relate and respect the truth and owning it versus going around and trying to cover something up.
Absolutely. They will respect you more at the end of the day for owning up to a mistake and solving it. That's the important part of it too. It's like, just don't tell me you made a mistake. Give me an amazing solution that now, you know, makes everything beyond better than what it was before.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Okay. Three last questions. The first one is, what is the next thing that you are looking to outsource in any one of your businesses?
In terms of like hiring people or what?
In general, what do you want to outsource? Like what in your business are you like, what am I going to move off my plate?
Oh, for me. Okay. To be honest, the next big thing I'm going to move over to someone else's plate is like the president role of RLM. Because right now I'm CEO and president, and I fully intend to be able to make my VP the president of RLM and just sit in the CEO seat in sometime in 2018.
Get it, girl. Usually it's like, I'm going to outsource social media, but girl, you were like, I'm going to move off being presidente.
Yes.
I love it. Get it. What's been like an influential book that you've read this year? And it could be fiction or nonfiction.
Ooh, that's good. I haven't done much reading this year. I think because I'm always writing. I think that one of the nicest books that I've read that does the best job at like dissecting the way that we think and operate through life from like an entertaining perspective is Shonda Rhimes's book, A Year of Yes. She's really interesting as a human because she's so creative and like talented. But as she tells her personal story, she weaves in that creativity and you just learn so much about her. And I'm obsessed with just like human nature. So It was just, I love consuming content around understanding human beings better. And I think that hers in some way was like a little bit of an insight to the human, like, you know, reality.
Totally. Human. That's my reason why I watch all these Real Housewives shows, is because I'm like, I'm just going to test my ability to predict the next move.
Yes. Oh my God. We need to do this together, because I'm such a dork and a geek when it comes to just people. Like, I used to think, oh, I'm a people person. I like people. And it's like, no, I mean, I like some people, but I don't like all people. I just like learning and watching and observing people, because it teaches you so, so much.
Right. Or even like watching Bravo, they'll like fade into one scene and I'm like, oh, I know exactly they're going to show this scene next time. They're going to do like a retro, her talking about this person, and then they do it and I'm like, got it, crushed it. Yeah. That could be a good thing or a bad thing. So people, you guys listening, feel free to judge me by all means. You know that that's my guilty pleasure. It's how I zone out. We all have them.
Yeah.
So, well, why don't you share with us where can my listeners find you, learn more about your companies, or connect with you anywhere on social media?
Yes, yes. So me personally, on social, everywhere, I'm just at Farisa Knox. And I have a website that talks about me and like connects you to all of my endeavors, farisanox.com. And really, like, go check out PR Girl, because it's the coolest thing ever. PRGirlSeries.com.
Yeah, and I'll put a plug. I binge watched them, and they're like anywhere from, I think, like 8 to 15 minutes, and they're like they're really good. Like, not as if I'm surprised, because hello, look who's behind it. Yeah, it was, I mean, so well done, and I just kept watching him. I'm like, this is cool, and, like, Alex is pretty cheeky herself, so I'm like, ooh, I want to see into that world, because then there's me half the time. I'm like, I'm in yoga pants, and I just got done working out, and I look like a hot mess, but, yeah, so it's fun to see that side. Ugh.
Yeah, I'm glad you loved it.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And we'll link to that as well. So, Miss Farisa Knox, thank you so much for coming back on the show. I so appreciate it. And you guys can check out all the information on the show notes as well.
Thanks for having me, babe.
Again, if you're just starting out with your business and you need an accounting software that is simple and easy to use, check out FreshBooks at freshbooks.com/she and enter in She Did It Her Way in the How Did You Hear About Us box.
Thanks for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. Did you like this episode? Head on over to iTunes.com to leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out SheDidItHerWayPodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our email list so you can receive the inside scoop on our latest episode released each Monday. Now, do us a favor and go make it a great week.